Since 1965, in the United States, the number of young Catholic men entering seminaries has dropped by 25%, even as the country's Catholic population has nearly doubled in the same time period. Writer Jonathan Englert wanted to spend time with men seeking to become ordained priests. Englert focused on a phenomenon becoming more common in the Catholic Church, mature men entering the priesthood not out of college, but after lives as fathers and husbands, even as grandfathers, and after divorces and following careers as army medics or successful businessmen. I spoke this past week with Jonathan Englert about his new book, The Collar. He started by telling me about the men he profiled.
The youngest was Dean Haley. He was a Marine medic prior to this, and also sort of an entrepreneur, and he had come to Catholicism as he got later into his 20s.
He's only about 30.
He's 30 when he gets to Sacred Heart, yes. And then there's Ron, and Ron Kunzierski is blind. He's been blind from birth. He has two master's degrees, an accomplished musician. He's about 32, I believe, when he got to the seminary. We had Jim Heiser. Jim Heiser was married and divorced. Essentially, from the time of his divorce until the time he entered seminary, the call was growing in him. So that's Jim Heiser. Then there's Don Malin. Early on in his life, maybe when he was 16, he thought he was going to become a priest. He was then sort of rejected by the Jesuits in his early 20s as a candidate for priestly life because I guess they didn't think he was mature enough at that time, wouldn't make a good candidate. And he eventually got married, and he was married for 12 years. When he finally arrives at Sacred Heart, he's already mature, but he goes through this whole process of having to reassess all the things he knows about his Catholicism, including, for example, the issues regarding birth control, what have you. And he eventually sort of winds up in his fifth year at peace with who Don Malin is going to be as a priest. Mm-hmm. In a way, he acts as a model because Dean, who's a sort of high wire act.
The very youngest one.
We're never really sure what's going to happen. And Don acts as a sort of foil to all that, where we see, this is what it's supposed to look like in a way. And this is what it sort of looks like at the beginning.
What do they wrestle with most? I mean, they're told by the rector of the seminary that, in a sense, particularly those who've come from, say, a business background, there's at least one man who's had a really high-profile business career, that it's kind of crazy to give up this earthly life to become a priest.
Yeah. In fact, that's right. I mean, a lot of the men are facing people back home who are saying, what are you doing? One guy's given up a pension and decades of sort of building that pension at I think it was at DuPont, to say, I'm going to become a seminarian. And I think he has six kids too. But he has this calling. He's just, life is not enough. The life he was living was not enough, and he's feeling drawn to it. I call the book The Collar for the two reasons, obviously the Roman collar, but also because I kept encountering these men who said they both were making the decision freely, and in a way they weren't. They felt, it's the traditional idea of, I'm being called by God. And then the seminary is this place where you have to figure out whether, in a way, were you calling yourself? Was, is God calling me? It's sort of a place where you're going to wrestle with all of that.
But I also liked your crowd a lot because they're very talky. They show up. One's driving a BMW. Someone else at some point is wearing this huge screaming yellow T-shirt with this enormous picture of Jesus on the back. Someone else wears leather
right.
sandals
and
in the middle of the and has tattoos. Someone else has wearing leather sandals in Milwaukee's winters. Coming from near there, I can't even imagine such a thing. But this calling, this collaring that we talked about, just seems to exist. And I was very struck by the story of one man. He was pushed by his mother. His father said, I'll acquiesce to that if you give me another son. The parents have another child. This man only becomes a priest. This is the 70-something guy in your group.
Right.
Near the end of his life, it's that younger son, the second son, who becomes the priest. And that was just an incredible little story.
It is a great story. Well, that's Jim Pemberton. Actually, you just brought us very neatly to our fifth character. He himself really felt like a call at 13, and he did love going to the seminary. And the other son ended up becoming a priest as Jim, the dropped out of seminary and went and got married. Yeah, and Jim was married for 45 years. He has four children and three grandchildren. They had a very happy marriage. Then he nursed his wife through cancer, and he brings a lot to the his, you know, vision is sort of priesthood.
Jonathan, since you work with men who had come so much to the seminary after having had other directions in their lives, I mean, what do you think about this as a development for the Catholic Church in general, which has seen such a decline in young people called to the vocation? And as you point out, these men enter the fall of 2002, the sex scandals. Boston's diocese alone is really embroiled. Milwaukee's archbishop will have to step down during the time that the men are there. Do men who have gone out into the world, do you think, is that perhaps one solution for the Catholic Church?
In terms of where we're at now, I think, yeah. Okay, the short answer is that second career seminarians definitely have a lot to contribute. And the response from the people in the pews to second career seminarians is almost always positive. They almost always feel, wow, this person has been where I am now. They understand the problems I have. They understand what it's like to have a family, to be in a relationship. Sometimes with some of the divorced men, they understand what it's like to be in a relationship when it goes really bad. You know, when you've invested everything you've had and then it still falls apart. I think that that is something that is very difficult to duplicate when you haven't had that experience.
What would you say sustains them? I mean, if someone is going to go through 4 years of these kinds of external, internal challenges, at a time when we've seen many people leave the priesthood and it goes through the changes that it has gone through, what beauty or ritual or conviction sustains them?
I wouldn't want to short shrift prayer. I think prayer is something that all of these men consistently return to. But I think the thing that really sustains them is support, is knowing that they're sort of making a worthy choice, they're doing something good, and then the support that comes from the people around them. What sustains them is their maybe acute sense of their own humanity, because they can share so much, probably share a lot more than most people do in their daily life with people. And it's all sort of tied in with maybe this issue of worthiness and their issue of service. And so all of that figures in.
Well, Jonathan Englert, it's a fascinating book. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Jackie. It's been great talking to you.
Jonathan Englert is the author of The Color, A Year of Striving in Faith Inside a Catholic Seminary.